Welcome to the What's the Temp podcast. My name is Bettina and I am coming in hot.
It's Tuesday and my name is Jen and I forgot my tagline and I have to check in so I don't check out. I need to check in so I don't check out.
Thank you. Good morning, Jen, and let's check in. Today's episode is called Good and Bad Shame, and I am super excited about this one. This is more than just my regular weekly excitement. I've been wanting to talk about this forever, so let's go, Jen.
We really have been talking about this one for, I think, since 2024?
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while since you brought this topic up.
Mm-hmm.
Since been a long time coming.
This one has. And so let's get
I'm going to defer to you. I want you to kick it off today since this is your crown jewel.
Well, today's temp check is a moral compass temp check. And the only example I know to give you is how we as parents have a tendency to demonize our parents' parenting and then romanticize our own. And that's all cute and fancy until your own children are old enough to tell you about the times that they've seen your horns.
Mm.
And I feel like the response to your kids saying, well, you weren't as perfect as you think you were, you know, your response is where good shame or bad shame can come in. And I feel like good shame is linked so heavily to self-awareness because, like Brené Brown, who jumped on the scene, 15 years ago, talking about shame and vulnerability and toxic shame for sure. And I remember one of the things that I learned from her early on was that shame was saying I'm bad instead of I did a bad thing. You take I did a bad thing and turn that into I'm bad because I did a bad thing. And when I say good shame, all I'm saying is having sense enough to improve or having the awareness to say, that's not cool. Let me do better. Right? And I feel like in our efforts to throw toxic shame out, we threw the baby out with the bathwater because we got so busy throwing out toxic shame, but we also started throwing away self-awareness and all the other good things that make us want to be better.
Hmm.
So for me, my moral compass temperature, I think I've been on a streak of perfect temperatures here, honey.
You sure have.
I've been on a streak because you know I'm up and down. But my moral compass temperature today is 350 degrees perfect oven temperature. It is because I'm big on looking at myself and wanting to do better. And then I love having that check in my spirit that says, that's not cool. And instead of letting my ego stand up and say, who do you think you are, right? Instead of that, I'd rather
defend, yeah.
Instead of trying to defend anything, I'd rather really take a introspective look at myself and see where I can improve and then let that spur me into action to actually improve. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
To me, it feels great. I wasn't sure where you were going to go with good and bad shame because I know you've been thinking about this for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I also have no familiarity with good shame or bad shame, really.
Mm-hmm.
Even with addiction, I was quite defensive of my addiction. So I never felt shame. Maybe me not feeling shame is something that kept me out there as long as I was because I just refused to feel the bad feelings that came with it I felt like I'm good. I'm just falling apart, but I'm good. Like I really defended my need to self-medicate until the bitter end,
mm-hmm.
until I was just completely a void and soulless and,
yeah,
you know, morally bankrupt, as they say. So the thing I was saying last episode about how I preemptively combat shame by just telling everybody my business, basically,
mm-hmm.
makes me out of touch with shame, because I think I always associate shame with the impulse to hide.
Mm-hmm.
So it's because I don't really hide anything. I can't think of anything, at least, that I hide. But I also don't think that I am out of the shame game, because certain therapists have said to me in the past, or at least my most recent therapist, she called out an action I was doing and said that motivation comes from the shame core. So it's not that I don't think I have shame. I'm a human being.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that I think that my shame exists below the line.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by below the line is it's below the level of awareness.
Mm-hmm.
So,
which is great. Is it great? Is that what you're saying?
It feels good. I mean, it feels good to me because I don't experience shame on
but
a conscious level.
But do you have self-awareness, though?
I mean, that goes without saying. I have extremely high self-awareness. But that doesn't mean I necessarily have that in all categories.
Mm-hmm.
It means I have it, I think, as a general quality, but there can certainly be blind spots. I think I work I think I work really hard at having self-awareness. Just like you said, I absolutely love working on myself. It can be uncomfortable at different times, but what you're saying is when you feel something that feels like shame, you have two options. You can either go into defensiveness and push that feeling away, or you can sit with that feeling and honor it and try to learn from it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what self-awareness is. And I am very, very big on never pushing feelings away. I think pushing feelings away or sublimating anything is incredibly unhealthy. And as uncomfortable as it might be, it's better to understand that feelings are temporary and that they come and go. And so to just try to sit with that discomfort. And that's something I never learned to do until I got sober, because
mm-hmm.
as a person who just used to basically smoke weed every single day, all day, whenever I would feel any type of discomfort, I would just smoke weed.
Mm-hmm.
And then that would change the way I felt. Or I would just drink that night or that morning, in my case, and just change the way I feel. So I always had this trap door. I always just had a way to get out of my feelings. So I would never sit with discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm hearing from you is that you're allowing this. I know I keep returning to this theme of honoring, but this honoring of the time and place, which is I'm experiencing this emotion now, this emotion of shame, and I'm going to choose what to do with this. So
mm-hmm.
I'm going to metabolize this, and I'm going to try to learn a lesson from it.
Mm-hmm.
So
what
that's,
is this here
that's
to
what
teach
I'm
me?
Hearing. Yeah, what is this here to teach me? Exactly. So yeah, I guess for shame, I mean, a moral compass temperature, I definitely feel very wedded to the idea of doing the right thing. It's
mm-hmm.
how I define myself. I'm not the type of person who wants to kind of get away with something or who wants to, like, I'm going to get mine. That's a way that I lived for a very long time and
mm-hmm.
just selfishly, and it didn't serve me at all. So I really want to always be doing the thing that causes the most harmony and balance in my energy sphere and in the world at large. So I put a huge amount of accountability on myself. I'm always trying to figure out whether I'm doing the right thing or not. So my moral compass temperature, if I were to go oven temp, I really think it would be right at a 350 as well.
Yay! Coming to my neighborhood, Jen.
Yeah.
But one of the things I learned from you, we were having some conversations a couple years ago, and I don't remember what the topic was, but what I learned from you was just do the next right thing. And what it did was it took all the complication, you know, all the things that I was using to complicate the situation, and you simplified it by saying, just do the next right thing. And then I had to say, okay, well, what does that mean? The pathway became so clear when you said to me, just do the next right thing.
Because it's not 10 steps ahead. It's just, what is the next right thing? Mm-hmm. And there's usually some type of intuitive answer that comes to you when you ask yourself that question.
I think what makes me so confident to speak with conviction about this topic is because I've identified myself as a lifelong learner. And I feel like my superpower has just been sitting at the feet of people that I felt could teach me something. So I've been intentional about not adopting a know-it-all spirit, because that's when, once you stop learning is when you stop evolving, to me. Because I feel like that's where my continued personal, emotional, and spiritual growth stems from. I feel like it's like the best part about me, that sponginess way, the spongy way that I have about myself. So just being able to have a conversation with people that love me where you can say, well, you're making it harder than what has to be, like, just do the next right thing, you know? And that's
overcomplicating.
It just helps me, because the way my brain, it's like a machine in here, and it's like taking all these parts and looking at the next 10 steps. No, don't do that. Just what's the right thing to do right now? And that has helped me so much over the last couple of years, because whenever I see myself in that cycle of trying to anticipate the next several steps, sometimes it's just do the next right thing. It's not just do the next thing, do the next right thing. That just puts you in a certain space, you know? So, I'm excited about this topic, as you can see. I'm sure you can feel my energy.
So I'm going to take the wheel here if I can become organized enough.
Okay.
First, I just want to give my update, because I realized I didn't really do it in the temp check. And last week's episode was really emotional for me, obviously. And I did have the DNC on Friday. And so
okay.
I don't really feel like I have any takeaways yet about it, other than that I didn't really like being under anesthesia. I was pissed because they made me go into the hospital at 1 for a surgery that wasn't scheduled until 5. So I felt also very imposed upon, kind of, in a way. And I made the best of it, and I brought a library book and everything. But I didn't really like going under anesthesia. That really messed with my sense of control and of agency. And then when I woke up from the anesthesia, there was like eye makeup all over my face. And that made me feel really weird, because I have a history of blacking out through alcohol and stuff. So it's like, I really don't like that there's a piece of my life that I can't remember. And I know it's not the same situation, but when you wake up with, like, because I had just come from interviewing this accountant. So when you wake up with, you know, I had just mascara on, but I woke up and it was all over my face. And I'm just like, why?
Yes. Why? Yes.
My doctor was wonderfully supportive, given the circumstances, which were, it was a set of poor circumstances. She was so wonderful with it. Like, she held my hand the entire time. She was there before and after. She was incredibly compassionate, you know? And that's what always makes me feel some type of way, is she's in this system too. So all the resentments that I have against the system that were really driving my anger last week sort of dissipated with this identification that here's this person who probably shares a lot of the same concerns, but who's actually in there operating with it and trying to work within that system. And I have a lot of respect for that, because I'm the type of person that would just run from it. I don't, when I encounter bureaucracy and red tape and systems like that, I'm like, okay, I'm going to live off the grid. Like, I don't try to work within the system. I'm just so all or nothing. So I can't be mad at her for, like, don't hate the player, hate the game.
Yeah.
I just wanted to follow up, because last week was just a really difficult one for me. So that's where I am right now. I'm just kind of bringing kindness to myself and trying to give myself grace.
Yes. So let's talk about the backstory, which is times when healthy shame guided you toward better choices versus toxic shame paralyzing you. You want to go on that?
I'm gonna let you take the lead, because I feel like we've been waiting all our lives, or you've been waiting all your life for this topic. So take us away.
One of my favorite pieces of advice to give young people from personal experience. Did you feel me getting close to the mic? From personal experience. One of my favorite pieces of advice to give young people is never do anything that you'll be afraid or ashamed to tell people you did. Never do anything that you'll be ashamed or afraid to tell people you did. And because those are the very things that I feel the enemy uses to keep you from walking boldly into the things you should be doing. So say...
You're only as sick as your secrets.
Yes! And so it's... Imagine having done something and you're hiding it and it's just debilitating you and it's
It'll
stopping
eat
you.
Away at you.
Yes. It's stopping you from walking in all those things, all those gifts and talents that were planted in you at birth. And then you become the shell of a person because you're hiding the secret that keeps you bound. And so it could be drugs, it could be crime, it could be something else, but if you're going to be ashamed to tell somebody you did it, how about we just don't do it, you know? And, but then here's the thing. If you've already done it and you're hearing this conversation, I like to say, instead of letting that thing eat away at you in the dark and keep you from being living fully and receiving the new mercy that's held in today, why don't you put your big girl panties on? Why don't you put your big girl and just bring yourself and that thing out into the light so that it can't continue suffocating and killing you, you know? And I think that's when... That was the thing that helped me start to become, instead of hiding in shame and sadness and depression and guilt and all the things, you know, that wanted to take me out and never let me use this voice to help someone else. I've been using my voice for the last, I don't know, several years since, I want to say since 2018-ish, you know, to help other people and just coming outside from hiding, coming out of hiding, coming out of the embarrassment, coming out from the things that wanted to keep me bound, you know, when you have a history and it's like shame is like a snowball, if you'll allow it to be. It starts as this tiny, tiny, tiny little thing. And then if you let it run rampant, it gets bigger and bigger and swallows everything in its path, you know? And I just refused to continue to be paralyzed by toxic shame and decided to tell Bettina's story, which I shared in Sobriety and Clarity, you know, and how I've been able to overcome things and how I've been able to be a light, not only for my children, but for the people that draw themselves to me. That's been my blessing, just coming out from... just recognizing the beauty that the thing didn't kill me. The fact that I'm still breathing says that there's new mercy held in today for me and that I get to help someone else cross over, you know, from the dark of the toxic shame and into the light of healthy shame and awareness and just the desire to be better and to do better and to use your success in that area to help someone else. What are your thoughts on that?
So my follow-up question is, can you give us a specific example of how you came face-to-face with a situation where there was the possibility of allowing shame to fester and become toxic versus you converting it into something that could be used to benefit others or your own personal growth?
So
let's get granular here.
And you do it to me every single time. Every single time.
I'm curious because I know you have a lot of stories that I've never heard.
A million of them.
Mm-hmm. A lifetime's worth, I imagine.
So every time I've been like when I told you when I became that bully. So it was like, you're not going to shut me down and you're definitely not going to fight me because I might be a girl, but I do have hands, right? I can fight. And so I remembered getting into it with someone close to me and he pushed me. He pushed me on the sofa. And I remembered I heard myself audibly say out of my mouth, one of us is going to die tonight. I'm not kidding you, Jennifer. I meant that with every fiber of my being. I heard myself say it. But then what happened next was a video played in my head. And I saw myself in handcuffs on the front porch. But it was morning. This happened at night. So basically, I really hurt the person. And the next morning, I'm going on my way to jail. Because how do I justify? You know what I mean? And that is where my early warning system, that's never happened before. Girl, I done beat some tail before, right? Beat somebody up. And then I remember when I remember that beautiful beachy looking house that I lived in Torrance.
Yeah.
I beat up a person over there and the Torrance police came and they said, ma'am, you got a pretty house and you got all this. He said, but I will take you behind the jail. Don't let me have to come out here one more time. You know what I mean? So I never had the video play of what could happen on the other side of this thing, you know? And that was my early warning system where we're not going back to that. You're not going back to having handcuffs because you want to beat somebody up. It was a push. Did he kill you? Are you hurt? No, but you can leave. Now it's time to leave, you know? But that was an example that just came to mind of one of those systems where the early warning system kicked in, you know?
Yeah.
And but that took a while to cultivate. And that's what I want to do. If I could give anything to people listening to this conversation is to not be so hard on yourself and expect it to happen overnight. Give yourself grace to be able to cultivate these systems and these processes and these ways of being that will edify you for the rest of your life. You know,
I just looked up shame, just for the heck of it. What does shame mean? Mm-hmm. And it said, shame is an unpleasant emotion that can cause feelings of worthlessness. I know that one. Distrust and exposure. Mm-hmm. It can be triggered by actions that violate personal values or beliefs or by trauma, even if the individual is not at fault. Shame can manifest in different ways, including social anxiety, low self-esteem. Chronic shame can be diffuse and global, leading to a constant sense of social anxiety and relational disconnection. So this is a really sprawling thing, mm-hmm. Shame. It can take so many different forms. I was thinking when you were talking about, you know, telling people don't do something that you wouldn't want to tell people about. But sometimes shame is less obvious. It can just be something where you're just holding on to it, but it's not. It's maybe just because you haven't made the assumption that whatever you're going through is universal. So it's something you're holding on to that's polluting you. It's soiling your spirit, but it's mm-hmm. not something that needs to be held on to. It might just be a pervasive sense of failure. It might be body image related. It could be just something that worthlessness obviously really jumped out to me there. It could be something you're ashamed of your past. It could be you're ashamed of a way you let someone down. It could just be that you don't feel good enough in some category or another.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's so broad.
It is very broad.
Yeah.
But having so much unworthiness that was just buried down in me for so long because of the mistakes that I made so early on.
Right.
To be able to come to this space where I don't have to perform, I can just be. And those that love me will be drawn to me. I am a very polarizing being, you know? So those that love me are going to be drawn to me. And for those that I'm too much for, they're like, not for me, dog. And that's okay too, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But it took me making silly mistakes, you know, that just made me feel even more weird that was the last thing I was trying to be. Make sense? Mm,
yeah. So that's interesting for me to hear you say that because we've talked about how I always saw you just as a person having bulletproof confidence. That's how mm-hmm. I've always received you and mm-hmm. witnessed you since we met. So it is interesting to hear hear you sort of revealing yourself in these moments of insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
Because
you've been getting a lot of them on these shows. I don't know if you really recognize that.
Before we started the show, I never really did experience until really recently, like right before we started the podcast, you started to talk a little bit about worthiness, but I've never heard you discuss it before that in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's been so cool to witness that growth. So yeah, and then what I love about it is that instead of just sort of trying to cover it up and move along or just feeling embarrassed and burning a hole through the ground, like you take it and you turn it over and you examine it and you say, what does this mean? What is this feeling? Mm-hmm. Let me examine this. And that self-examination and that sort of absorption is leading you into down a path of self-awareness that then helps to point you to what is it that you should be working on? How can you in the future try to stay truer to yourself so that you don't experience mm-hmm. these moments of that kind of out of body? Like, who am I trying to be right now? Why am I not being myself?
Mm-hmm.
What am I trying to prove?
And yeah. I feel like the reason I'm talking about it more is because it's easy to believe when you see the result that it's always been this way, that I've always been comfortable in my skin. And I just haven't. I felt like my teens and 20s were shrouded in shame.
Mm-hmm.
Remember we talked about me finding my voice, where I went from having no voice at all to being a bully. Then I went right. from being, then I didn't want to be that.
Yeah, the pendulum swung too far. Yeah,
it went too far to one side. And so then it was like, all right, well, let me find this middle space. But then once I started finding the middle space, then it's like, now you have to learn how do you want to use that voice? Do you want to have it reverberating off the rafters? Or do you want it to be soft? And, you know, I like, how do you have to, so then there's this nuance that comes in and all these
big personality
settings. And I am a big personality, but sometimes you want to walk in and have a muted, like, I don't want to come in and announce myself. That's not what I want to do. There's a way to own the room without announcing yourself. And I had to learn how to walk that line. And so the reason I feel like you're getting the ugly side of it now is because it was a process and the process was ugly.
Right.
Instead of letting it make me go back into hiding, I wanted to use the good shame to make me better, to prompt me to action. And so that's what it's been for me, a process.
Yeah. I love the idea and the why you're describing the process of transforming shame, because mm-hmm. I find that ultimately I've never really been able to control the first emotion I have, just the same as I'm not able to control my mind. Mm-hmm. So if my mind is really intent upon serving me up some type of looping thought or latching onto something and obsessing over it, I find that the best way for me to deal with that is to just kind of try to hold on for the ride, you know, mm-hmm. because every attempt for me to fight that thing or push it off is just giving it energy mm-hmm. instead of just letting it do what it needs to do and just run itself out and then pass and sort of try to see if I can observe it and see, what is this trying to bring to me? What's the point of this? What am I, like you said, what am I supposed to be learning from this?
Mm-hmm.
So,
But
then you're deciding, you are making a conscious choice what to do with it. So it's coming, mm-hmm. it's feeling like shame, it's having a negative connotation, it's a bad emotion, it's an uncomfortable one. But then you're making a choice of how do you want to make this experience transformative for you? And I mm-hmm. think that's really inspiring.
Thank you. I feel like there's a difference between how I see good and bad, or good shame or bad shame or whatever. There's a difference between conviction and condemnation, right? Conviction can spur you to change. condemnation is basically sentencing you to death, is how I see it. And so that's the difference between shame that crushes your spirit and the kind of internal compass that we've been talking about that makes you pause and say, is this how I want to show up in the world or for the people that I'm called to, you know? And the condemnation is like self-hatred to me, you know, because it's not necessarily the outside world, you know, condemning you. It's you condemning yourself, because most of the time the outside world doesn't even know your shame, right? The toxic shame and the thing that you're holding so dear and wrapping yourself in, the best parts of yourself in. So it's that difference between conviction and connection and self-awareness and consideration, right? So I just feel like I see people confuse realness or being authentic with being inconsiderate. And this is just on a broader scale. This is where I'm talking about the self-awareness piece, right? Sometimes we're like, I'm just keeping it real, but that's rude and that's mean. And you know what I mean? And it's not cool. Being real doesn't mean abandoning basic courtesy or responsibility to our communities. That's not what it means. You can be authentic and still loving and caring. And it doesn't also doesn't mean self-flagellance, you know, flagellating. What is that word where you're beating yourself up all the time? It's not that. It's not always self-deprecation either. It's just bringing sometimes the ugly parts to light so that it can't, you can't heal what you hide. I've said that before on this show. You can't heal what you hide. And so when we lose that internal check system entirely, we end up with people who think that any behavior is justified as long as I'm being true to myself, you know?
I'm
keeping it real with the public. You know, there's a way to be true to yourself and keep it real and still have a warning system that says, well, that part's not okay, but this part, if you say it this way or if you phrase it this way, it can really bring healing. And to me, the goal isn't to bring back toxic shame or the kind of shame that makes people hide who they are or feel fundamentally flawed. I felt that and I never want to feel that again, you know? But it is about, to me, reclaiming the part of our conscious that cares about how our actions affect others. Like for me, I want to take pride in being someone that others can count on and showing up well. And that's what self-awareness has done for me. So I don't know, maybe it's not shame. Maybe it's just recovering a sense of personal responsibility and social awareness that I feel like was thrown out. We threw the baby out with the bathwater. When we were throwing out toxic shame, we threw out a lot of other great things that would make us better. And so for me, if I could reclaim anything, it's the awareness of how I want to be, not to the point of where I'm so focused on self that I'm not present in what I'm doing. You know me, I'm the person that's going to be present in whatever scenario or situation I'm in, but that I'm reflective enough to show up in the way that I'm comfortable with, that brings me joy and that brings the other people around me a level of joy and peace that I'm there, that I'm present. Yeah. They're happy that I showed up. They want me to be a part of their community. That's so important to me. And that's why it's important to let go of the toxic shame, you know, grab a hold of self-awareness, have an early warning system that works for you. You know how some cars, I hate these cars. I think it was like GMs. My brother had one where if you're coming up on the car in front of you too fast, the car brakes on its own and this light's like flashing on your dashboard kind of thing. That early warning system that says, you know what, I'm going to stop you right here before you crash this thing, you know, before you crash your whole life.
I have one example that I'll give of a time when I sunk into shame in a way that was not productive, because it really took me down, because it was a way that I thought I was acting in accordance with my value system, but it turns out that the other person didn't receive it that way. And that's where I get into a lot of trouble, I think, sometimes. So this was a lot earlier in my sobriety, and I had a lot of sponsees, which are basically when you're a sponsor, you take women predominantly through the 12 steps and you sort of act as their guide in the program of recovery. And starting at a really young sobriety age, I started doing that with a lot of people. And too many people, considering the place that I was in mentally and emotionally. And one of the people that I was working with, she had sent me this writing assignment that I had given her. And it contained this idea that I thought was just so incredibly brilliant. And I basically screenshotted it and then kind of cut the image so that it was just this little like sentence. And I sent it to like two or three people, like not giving the name of who wrote it, but just to say, look at this brilliant idea, you know, and isn't this so wonderful? And I sent it, it happened to be about weight loss. And I sent it to a few people that I knew were struggling with body image. And I thought, you know, I didn't think anything of it. I just thought this is a brilliant thing I've encountered and now I'm going to share it. And then what I did next, and maybe this was like a God shot, but I accidentally sent it to her.
Okay.
And she was like, why are you sending this back to me? And I, instead of lying, because lying is just really not in my nature, I said, oh, you know, I screenshotted this and I had shared this with a couple of people because I thought it was so wonderful. So I'm just thinking nothing of it. I'm just thinking this, I'm sharing this wonderful tidbit, you know, that someone said with people who need it. And her reaction was that her trust in me and in our relationship was completely broken.
Oh.
Because I violated the sacredness of our relationship. Because she had written me something, an assignment, in confidence, and I had turned around and shared it. And she's a really – and she had found out about it because I told her when I sent it to her. So it really – broke the trust between us. And I was so blindsided because I just thought my intentions were so good, but I had done the wrong thing. So this is something where I just, what I did wasn't right. Because when I establish relationships like this with people, it's so essential that I maintain their trust, because we can't do work and experience growth together if they don't trust me. So I have to be an absolute vault with any information that they give me. So that was a really hard way for me to learn this lesson, but it really took me down because I had recognized the wrongness of what I did and because I had realized how much it hurt her, I couldn't let it go. So remember how I talked about depression, not clinical depression, but my kind of depression, just utter self-centeredness. So just what you were talking about with that self-flagellation, that was where I took it. I couldn't let it go. I couldn't let myself off the hook for it. I couldn't get past how I had made her feel, because I had made amends to her. There's something called a 10th step amends where you just, as soon as you realize you're wrong, you promptly admit it. And I did promptly admit it. And I just said, oh my gosh, that was completely the wrong thing to do. That was a mistake, you know, and I came clean about it right away, but she didn't forgive me.
Yeah.
So that then taps into a lot of different stuff that I have. So I have issues with people pleasing. I have issues with control. I have issues with my ego. So it's like really opening up a Pandora's box of my own weaknesses. And there's also just this real sense of powerlessness when you have to let somebody go through the process that they need to go through, and they might need to be angry with you and they might need to be disappointed in you. And I really, really struggle with that. So because of those things, you know, also perfectionism, like at that time, I just couldn't allow myself to have any type of, you know, indiscretion, if you will, or just any mistake. I couldn't be a person who had made a mistake because I just had a really black and white way of thinking. If I did this thing, then I'm a horrible person and this defines me. And then here, you know, it confirms what I've always suspected, which is that I'm a bad person. I'm worthless. And that's shame. So that's the shame core.
Yep.
The shame core is that underneath all of this work that I've been doing on myself, that is all just a mask for this original feeling of worthlessness. Mm-hmm. And that's not where I am today, but I'm just saying that I hung on to that suspicion that I really wasn't good enough for 37, 38 years of my life. So that was what was always driving people-pleasing and perfectionism. And so when I had confirmation that I had messed up, I just wouldn't let myself off the hook for it. It was like, mm-hmm. see, you know, and that's the opposite of what we're talking about. It's not necessary to beat yourself up. Like, the feeling of the shame is bad enough mm-hmm. without having to add what's called the second arrow to it. I don't also need to then label that on top of everything else and then go after myself. That piece of it is unnecessary. The feeling of shame I can't avoid, but then that second layer I'm adding onto it, that can be avoided. Mm-hmm. I just didn't know how at the time. I just didn't have the tools. But I remember being down, I was actually at Meryl's house down the shore, which is my friend who has the waterfront property, who always gets what she wants if we're going to have mm-hmm. like recurring characters in this show. And she was just like, let it go. Like, she's just not really the type of person who hangs on to stuff. And that's part of mm-hmm. why I admire her so much. But I couldn't. I needed to have it ruin my entire day at the beach with her. I needed to have it carry over like this residue into everything I was doing, because now I don't deserve to enjoy myself. You know, so that going after myself was a really hard habit to break. And I think that's what I'm picking up from you, is there's going to be times when we act in a way that's not in accordance with our own value system, mm-hmm. or maybe our value system hasn't caught up yet to our own intuitive feeling of who we are, who we want to be. You know, at the time I thought I was acting in accordance with my value system, and maybe when you made your sort of your tragic figure mistake all the way back when, maybe you thought you were acting in accordance with your value system, because your value system was to provide for your family.
Girl, I hadn't even identified one.
Yeah, but also it was being clouded by desperation, so you were just in survival mode. So your value system, it wasn't as well established yet. Mm-hmm. But it was somewhere in there, because then when you made a mistake, you felt that conflict, that inner conflict. So. Mm-hmm. You know, in that instance, I did eventually obviously have to relax into the place of just, I'm not really going to ever feel good about this. And what can I learn from it? And what I've learned from it is just that I thought that there were no holes in my ability to protect people's secrets, because I am the type of person that people tell their secrets. So I always have been, and I've always considered myself to be a vault. But that was a real kind of come to Jesus, excuse the expression, for me, of like, you're not as much of a vault as you think you are, because in that mm-hmm. instance you were lacking in discretion and you had zero self-awareness of that fact. So it really shook me, and it really woke me up to that I'm not perfect either, but maybe in the best possible way, because I think that experience so profoundly affected me that it also opened up all this other stuff, where it was like, I'm not okay with someone feeling disappointed in me. I'm not okay with somebody experiencing something that I don't want them to experience, and that's just not something I'm going to be able to avoid. Mm-hmm. I have to let people go on their own journeys, and that's why I was really happy when my spiritual advisor, who was with me at that time, I had just started working with her, and she said, do you really know what is in God's plan or the universe's plan? Is it possible?
Not at all.
Is it possible that person needed to learn a lesson in disappointment today, and that it has nothing to do with you? You know, like maybe things were arranged in that fashion because they need to learn something from this. Like, you can't be thinking you know everything everybody should be experiencing all the time, or that you should be preventing other people from having negative experiences, because negative experiences, like we're saying, you can learn from them, and they build character.
They're the best
they build
teachers.
Characters to go through adversity. And so that's just the one that's coming to mind, because I really, really went after myself for that. And I think even though I say I'm not that cognizant of shame, I think when I am going after myself, I think that is coming from a shame core place. So luckily I'm not as prone to that as I was years ago, but that's one that I had a lot of trouble letting go of. So that's a specific example I can give.
Well, look at us being grown and being grown and mature and self-aware.
I love how congratulatory you are of us.
Let's get into these appetizers, Jen. Our appetizer today, let me see what it's called, because I want to give this to you. Our recipe today is the accountability appetizer. Don't you hate these names? The accountability appetizer is... accountability appetizer is what we have today. What do you have for our accountability appetizer?
Oh, wait, but I thought there was like a... There's an additional... piece to it, which is that it's a dish that requires precise timing and attention.
I don't know, but it's my favorite appetizer to make for people.
Okay, I'm excited for it. Do you want to go first?
Okay, so mine is a wasabi crab dip. I get the big cans of jumbo lump crab. And I take wasabi, it's so simple. Cut up some green onion. Take some wasabi mayo. And because I'm a bit, I'm not a wasabi punk. I just don't really care for wasabi mayo, but it's so good in this. And so I take wasabi mayo and I mix it with regular mayo. The person I got the recipe from years ago used only wasabi mayo. And that was just too much going on, too much wasabi in my head. But I like to mix wasabi mayo because it's like it affects me. My nose opens up and all of a sudden I can breathe and hear and see.
It can be a lot. But a little bit is a lot with a wasabi.
So I mix wasabi mayo with regular mayo to my taste, right? And you can do the same. Cut up green onions, put all the lump crab, kind of drain it, put all the lump crab in a bowl. Mix your wasabi mayo and your regular mayo. Mix it all up, mix in those green onions and season with salt and pepper and have with, you can do wonton, fried wontons. You can do I love to do it with like tortilla chips that I make that I actually fry because they're a little bit more sturdy than the tortilla chips in the store. Or you can have it with crackers. Either way, it's an amazing, amazing appetizer. But I think the wasabi kick, like if you just mix crab, lump crab with mayo, there's nothing to it. But when you put the wasabi in there, the wasabi is what gives it that kick. It's really good.
And wasabi goes great with seafood.
It does. And so it's just that extra that you need with the green onions, giving it a little bit of freshness. And if you want to squeeze a little lemon on there, you can. But honey, that's my simple accountability appetizer, wasabi crab dip.
Love that. So you fry your own tortilla chips?
I do. You know?
How do you do that?
Just take some tortillas, some corn tortillas, cut them in fours and drop them in hot oil. When they come out, put a little bit of...
So you're deep frying them.
Yes, put a little bit of Himalayan sea salt on them when they come out. And hunty, the best tortilla chip you've ever had. And they can pick up heavy stuff.
you're intrepid and I like it.
What's your accountability appetizer?
So mine is jalapeno poppers.
Oh, yes.
I love jalapeno poppers so much. I just love them. Ever since I got introduced to them, I was like, I'm about this.
Yes.
So I make my own jalapeno poppers. It's one of my favorite football snacks. So it's easy. So I've always had a deep fryer. Someone gave me it as a housewarming gift. And so I actually recently gave it on Facebook Marketplace for free, actually, to a culinary school student. So I don't have it anymore, but I think I can just do it. I haven't tried it since, but I think I can just do it like how you said, with just a frying pan and oil. But basically, you cut the jalapenos in half. I never knew, I always thought you'd have to stuff the cheese inside, but you just cut them in half. And then you have to have a mixture. It's made of softened cream cheese and cheddar cheese. Now, I use scallion cream cheese because I'm just an oniony gal. I like an onion.
That's
I like a scallion.
So cute.
I just love a scallion cream cheese. And the local bagel store makes this incredible scallion cream cheese. So I use that with
your bagel store.
Sometimes
is
I use
the best.
Jack.
I've not encountered a better bagel store. Oh my gosh.
It is really, really good. I mean, you cannot beat the bagels in the New Jersey, New York area. I'm sorry. But Sorry for anyone who doesn't live here, but they're delicious. So anyway, I do some type of, you know, the scallion cream cheese with some type of cheese. Sometimes I'll do jack, sometimes I'll do cheddar, sometimes a mixture, whatever I've got on hand. And then you basically just pack that cheese into the half jalapeno. So you've opened it up. If you really don't like a spicy, or if your jalapeno is too spicy, cut out the ribs and the seeds. That's fine. I cut out the seeds just texturally. I don't like there to be seeds in there, but I leave the ribs because I like a spicy.
Okay.
And you have to dredge them in milk and then dip them in flour.
Okay.
Then you got to just stick them on the side for 10 minutes. Then you have to dip them in milk again. And then you roll them up in breadcrumbs. So I like panko breadcrumbs. Ooh, I just like a crispier. Yes. But sometimes I'll do a mixture of, and I don't like, you can't get the seasoned ones for this because the Italian seasoning doesn't go with the jalapeno popper.
Okay,
that doesn't
good.
Play nice together. So you just do a regular panko. Sometimes I'll mix it with just a regular breadcrumb if I want it to be a little bit heavier. Mm-hmm. And then you just roll them up in the breadcrumbs after their second coat of milk. You let them dry again. And then you have to do that whole process one more. So it's really quite labor intensive. So you're sticking them back in the milk and then you're putting them back into the breadcrumbs.
Mm-hmm.
So
wait, you milk, flour, milk, breadcrumbs.
Yes.
Okay.
Milk, breadcrumbs again. So you got to kind of make a thick
crust. Okay, I was
crust.
Missing it. Okay, got
yes,
it.
Yes, yes. So the flour is only the first time. Now you put the oil's hot in the skillet and you literally just drop them right in there and then you just wait until they're the color you want them to be. Like I like them to be pretty toasty, so they're kind of a lightish brown. You pull them out, so they're going to be in there probably 2 to 3 minutes. You really do have to watch them. This is a timing thing. You do not want to burn those, and you also don't want them to be too raw because then the breading's falling apart. They have to be crispy. Take them out, just throw them on a paper towel, let them cool just a little bit because you still want them to be warm.
Yes.
That's it. And then you just get this delicious burst of cheese. The pepper has softened up in there. It's just absolutely delicious. It's a perfect football snack. And you know I'm a football fanatic. Also had our first NFL preseason game. So, like, we're in it now. I'm going to get my sign. I have it's football season sign that sits on my TV stand. I'm ready for
awesome.
It.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so wait, I have a question. Are you piping the mixture into the, or are you just...
No, because you just cut them in half. So that's the thing. You don't have to pipe anything.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was my initial confusion with jalapeno poppers is because they're rolled in that breadcrumb mixture, you can't actually see what's going on.
Okay.
But it's a half jalapeno.
Okay, love it.
Yeah.
Got it. Well, listen. Listen. This is the end of another amazing episode of the What's the Temp podcast. Listen, have a great 24. I'm so glad that you hung out with us today.
Oh, man, you stole my lines. I'm going to take be great on purpose.
I love it. Did I take yours and you took mine?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I love them both. Some days I just think to myself, I'm driving along in the car and I just think, be great on purpose.
Be great
That's
on
the person
purpose,
I want to be. Yeah.
Yes. Well, it's been real. We've enjoyed you.
Thank you for joining us. Peace.